Welcome aboard. It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. What a weekend. International break is over, and here we go. We're going to be talking Spurs and City. Spurs, top of the table. We'll be talking Barcelona and Atleti. Everything that can go wrong is going wrong for Barcelona. We have a packed quick hits. Of course, we've got Zlatan. We've got Liverpool with everybody injured. So strap yourself in. Join us. Jules, Spurs are top of the league. They beat City. Pep Guardiola came out afterwards and said, well, you know, we're creating the chances, we're shooting on goal, we're not scoring. Expected goals suggest that maybe Pep shouldn't be worried. Should he be worried? Should he be concerned?
It's funny because I spoke to Kevin De Bruyne after the game for French television.
And he didn't look happy on television.
And he didn't say that either. He said we played really well until their box. And after that, we struggled. We lack cutting edge. And Pep comes out and says, we create loads of chances. Well, not really. There's the header at the end from Gabriel Jesus. It's a good save by Lloris. There's a goal disallowed. Handball, no handball. What was funny is I was at the game. I was straight behind the City people and City camp. And the score is great. And then Pep turns around to his people who were watching the game on their iPad and said, is it a handball? Is it a handball? He says it in every language. In Catalan, in Spanish, in English. And they can't answer because I just don't think it's that obvious. You know, you could see given, you could see not given. It's tricky a bit. But I don't think City played badly. I just thought that there was a trap. They fell into it like they did last year, when Mourinho was already the manager. And when you concede so early in a game where Cancelo falls asleep, it's very difficult against a team like that. But I think it was a Jose masterclass from start to finish.
This feels like a concerning deja vu, right? Where City get caught out by a team that counterattacks and counterattacks extremely effectively. And I think we should give credit to Jose here, no?
Oh, huge. For me, it's an absolute masterclass. First, putting Son on the right wing instead of his usual left wing, which that's where he always plays because he can turn Son on his right. He does his step over with his right foot and then shoots with his left. He scores many goals like this. But this time you play him on the right. Why do you play him on the right? Because you know Cancelo is going to play as a left back for City. And he's not really a left back. He's more a hybrid. He plays in midfield when they have the ball, has to go back to the left side position when they don't have the ball. And you knew that Son could punish him. But I just didn't think it would be that early. But he paid off so quickly. And I think then you bring Lo Celso on. First touch is the control. Second touch is the goal. It's pretty incredible. But overall, I thought from Jose was a masterclass. When Torres had a bit of freedom at the beginning, he called Moussa Sissoko on the side and said, sort this out. So between you and Oye, you have to sort this out. And they did really well because then Torres, after the first 15 minutes, was really quiet. I just thought it was incredible. Do you think they can win the league?
You know, Jules, I hear the words that Jose speaks. I hear the sound of victory. I hear the sound of Dier and Bale. I hear the sound of victory. I hear the sound of Hongmin Son. I hear the sound of victory. And Kane, and Kane, and Kane. Now, all right, I was channeling my inner Paul White for a minute.
That was good. That was good. That was good.
Look, I don't know that you can win a title playing purely on the counter in modern football, in 2020-21. So it's about getting another dimension. I think two things need to happen for Spurs to win the title this year, to take it sort of another notch. Because, again, playing on the counter, we know he can do that very, very effectively. One is, I still think they need to tighten up defensively. I'm sorry, I don't think Eric Dier is a great central defender. He certainly improved playing at the back. You can sort of mask the situation, but I don't know that they're quite that watertight.
No,
the
other thing, and Alderweireld is injured now.
And Alderweireld obviously out. Although there are alternatives. I mean, I'm not that down on Davinson Sanchez the way some people are. The other thing though, that what you need in these situations, if you're going to do it, you're going to need individual match winners who can do things for you in situations where the other team park the bus and, you know, they leave you the ball and you're like, all right, what do we do with it now?
Yeah.
And Spurs have match winners.
Yeah.
Hongmin Son, obviously. Gareth Bale, value added. If he's fit, maybe he can do it. Harry Kane's been tremendous. And I think this is another thing we need to give Jose Mourinho credit for. The way he drops into space. Now, obviously, when you're playing on the counter, it's easier to do that. Yeah. But we've seen him do this in other games when they weren't playing on the counter.
Yeah.
So that's a real credit to Harry Kane. And
For me, he's one of the stories of the season.
No, 100%. And I've said it many times. He's England's best number 9, England's best number 10. And Lo Celso, to go into your point, I think in the game where you will have a lot of the ball, Lo Celso is key. If they can keep him fit, I think he could be the key.
I think, yeah, you're right. If Spurs win the title, I think Lo Celso needs to be a big part in those types of games.
Yeah.
All right, Jules, we said bye-bye to the people who only watch us on television. Now it's time to get granular, to get nitty-gritty. We can point out City's flaws, but before we do that, I also think we need to talk a little bit more about Spurs.
Yeah.
I told you what they needed to win. We talked about Lo Celso. I think there's a big man management element to it here as well. We've seen Mourinho be up and down with man management.
Yeah.
But I look at this and Ndombele, we've heard so many different conflicting things. Mm. He's bad, he's good, he's on the naughty step, we don't like him. Whatever he's done, what is he getting right now with Ndombele that maybe he got wrong with, I don't know, Luke Shaw or really half a dozen people at United, and can it last? Is this a more mature, more evolved Mourinho? Is this a Mourinho?
I don't know if that's the case. I certainly think that with Ndombele, he wanted to go. He could not left the club. I think they tried. There was just no way.
But he brought him back in, I think, is my point.
Yeah. But once you haven't left, you say, okay, you're here, I'm here. Now let's work together, because I think Jose from the beginning recognized how talented Ndombele is, which he is. He's an incredible talent. You just have to make him understand that if you don't work hard enough on the pitch, you could be as talented as you want, unless you're Messi or Cristiano. It's not going to work. And I think I just think that if you pick the right word when you talk to Ndombele, he will understand. And once he understands, then you get a different price on your hand. If you're on top of that, you play him a bit higher on the pitch, which is exactly what they do. Instead of having him more as a number 8, now he's as a number 10 because he plays behind Kane. Of course, he has a bit of defending to do, but not as much as what they wanted him to do last year. If you remember the Burnley game where he took him off at half time. And he had one of the worst first halves you would ever see, because he was just not putting any pressure on anyone. If you put him higher on the pitch, you take all that side away from him that he's not keen on, really. And I think that works. And then behind that, you've got Højbjerg, who runs for three, and Sissoko, who runs for three as well. But they're not as good technically as Ndombele, but that's not a problem. They can do the running, and then Ndombele does all the technical stuff. And I think that works perfectly.
The Højbjerg factor, I mean, what I find really interesting about Højbjerg is, obviously, he's had a big impact, and people will look, I gave up Kyle Walker-Peters, who I wasn't going to use anyway for Højbjerg, you know, a tremendous steal of the season. What I find interesting, though, is last year at Southampton, he was playing for a team that pressed insanely high, played at a super high pace.
Yeah.
Spurs play a completely different type of football, and yet he hasn't missed a beat. And I look at Mourinho and I wonder, when he considered Højbjerg, did he see, okay, I like this guy, he's a good player, he's performed in that system, I can see that he can perform in a completely different system as well. And look, if that's what he did, chapeau, because...
But I just think it's easier. If you play for Southampton...
No, I know it's easier, but he's used to something completely different.
Yeah, but then it's easier to move from a high-pressing team to a low-block team, because if you run 15 kilometers per game with let's say 50 high-intensity sprints, and suddenly you go to a team where you will have to run as much, but you only do 25 high-intensity sprints,
no question.
Because there's no, you know, you don't press as much, you don't run as much, it's not a bit crazy, like, you know, go this and go there. If you're intelligent like Højbjerg, it's easier for you in a way, and I just think he needs to improve a bit with the ball, I think. But because you've got Ndombele, because you've got Kane, it's a pretty simple role. I just think if they avoid some key injuries like they've had, if you think about it, in the last two or three seasons, you know, if you don't lose Kane in January last year, I know there's the pandemic, but, you know, or Son at some point, you know, you will obviously be stronger, because the depth in that squad, I'm not so sure. If you put Winks in the team, if you put Carlos Vinicius in the team, even if you have to play Lucas Moura for Son, it's obviously not the same. You know, not the same result and not the same potential.
Although he did get the best out of Lucas Moura as well.
Yeah, true.
We got to give him credit there. Now, from your vantage point, sitting, you know, you could probably reach out and touch Pep's head if you really wanted to. And you picked up something on the second goal.
Yeah, on the second goal. I mean, it's funny because we talked about Kane and how amazing Kane was and Kane is. But on the second goal, it's obviously Kane driving the ball. And then passing to Lo Celso. But there's a very good diagonal run from Steven Bergwijn, who takes away, yeah. who leaves the space to Lo Celso. And as he's making his diagonal run, he shouts to Kane, Joe, as in like, you know, I'm running and then Joe is on his own, so pass it to Joe. As if Kane needed Steven Bergwijn to say to him, hey, look, he's on his own, pass him the ball. Kane could have closed his eyes and he knew that Lo Celso was there. But it was good from Bergwijn, who I thought had a decent game in what he was asked to do, which was pretty much defending. But that was funny because he made his run and went, Joe, as in like, yeah, we all know Joe was free.
All right, so going back to City, if the issue is the issue that they're not taking as many high quality, taking a ton of shots, are they not taking as many high quality shots as before? Is it a question of maybe taking that extra pass? Maybe a little bit of the frenzy of being a goal down, of having to come from behind.
Yeah.
Is this what we're seeing?
I think there's a bit of that. Do you think that Aguero is missing for so much is obviously part of it? I think it has to be because Gabriel Jesus is not the same player.
He hasn't come back. I mean, he's only come back fairly recently himself from injury.
Yeah, as well. And he was not too bad, I thought, on Saturday. When he takes the ball and runs with the ball, he's so good and he's quick. But there's no end product there. Or certainly there was no on Saturday. So I think you're missing out. We've said many times David Silva not being there, not being replaced, especially in those games where you play against a very low block team. There's no space. You need something a bit magical. And I think KDB struggles a little bit as well in those kind of games when he can't run with the ball.
What I wonder is when we have fully fit Aguero, and I think it's a legitimate question to ask, what Aguero are we getting? Because, you know, time passes for him as well. He's coming back after a long injury. He's going to be, 32 now? Yeah. He has a contract situation to deal with. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a mistake sort of taking as read. Like, well, put Aguero back and everything's going to be fine.
Sure.
I think this is the moment when there has to be transition.
Yeah.
And this takes me on to my next question, which is Pep signed a contract. I mean, annoyingly, he didn't wait. He waited until after the show to tell us.
Yeah.
So it's a 2-year extension. Obviously, it's so typical, like, you know, sort of City saying, oh, we were never in doubt that he was going to extend it. I'm like, yeah, well, maybe you weren't. Maybe he was because he waited until November, which is free to do. I mean, look, he's done enough that he could wait until, you know, after his contract expires to sign a new one. People are putting this sort of within the Messi lens.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, is one reading of it. Fair enough. Messi becomes a free agent. And, you know, would Messi come if there wasn't a long-term commitment, or at least a 2-year commitment from Pep? Maybe not. No. Maybe it increases your chances there. What I find interesting, though, is that to what degree will Pep need to rebuild? Or at least, I mean, I think item number one at the top of his agenda is going to necessarily be the center forward situation in these 2 years. Because obviously, Aguero, you'll need to phase him out. And you're going to have a big call to make on Gabriel Jesus, which then suggests to me, all right, they need to be in the market for a striker, for a center forward. Now, let's leave. And then if you're in the market for a center forward, is it Lionel Messi in the ultimate short-term situation? Or is there any center forward that you think would be a good fit for the City team?
I mean,
other than Lewandowski.
Yeah. I mean, but Messi, in many ways, doesn't make the sense in the way of, before I get abused by City fans, in the sense that this is not what you need, right?
Like, no.
As you rightly say, you certainly need...
If you get Messi, you become a different team.
Yeah.
If you get Messi, what you're saying is, all right, I'm Pep. I've been here 6 years or whatever it is, longer than anywhere else. We've won 2 titles, whatever. Now... We did it playing a certain way. Now I'm bringing you one of the greatest players in the history of the universe, and we will become a different team to cater to him.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a huge step, I think, mentally, psychologically, philosophically, for the club to take. I'm not sure it's the right step for the club long term.
No.
But whatever it is, Guardiola's
got... You can't pass on signing Messi, right? If you've got the opportunity, you have to go.
And Pep has earned the right to make those decisions.
Yeah, completely. If Messi comes, Aguero stays 100%. There's no way that the two best friends cannot play together at club level. I don't care what, you know, what Aguero wants to do. He wants maybe to come back home. Well, he can go home after once him and Messi have retired from City.
But is a City team with Messi and Aguero becomes a completely different City team. You agree with that?
Yeah,
it's
got
nothing to do with what we've seen
before.
It
does, but just the thought of Aguero, De Bruyne and Messi all together, and you're thinking, wow, okay, yeah, we've got something. However, it doesn't take away from the fact that at some point they will have to go and sign Erling Haaland or someone like that.
Is Haaland a fit for this team?
I think he can hold the ball well. I think he can link up the ball. He can link up the player really well.
Haaland's such a good passer, too.
Yeah, it's exactly what you need for a Pep team. You need someone who can do everything as a striker, not just finish. And that's why Aguero at times was not really a good fit for Pep.
True.
But I think Haaland would be perfect.
All right, City fans, watch this space. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, arguably the biggest game of the weekend, Atletico Madrid taking on Barcelona. It was supposed to be the return of Luis Suarez. We didn't see it because he cleverly went and tested positive for COVID while international duty. Never saw that one before. But it doesn't matter because Atletico Madrid go out and they beat Barca. Now, we're joined by Alex Kirkland. Alex, we'll get into Barca dissection. But again, in the interest of peace and love before Black Friday, let's be positive. Like, can we praise Atleti first? Because I felt, correct me if I'm wrong, this was not just Atletico. All right, in the second half, when they were defending the lead, maybe it was old-style Atletico sitting back. But in the first half, they took the game to Barcelona. They created at least two really, really good chances. And I thought Koeman totally wasn't expecting to see Atletico play like this.
I think Atleti are looking like a very well-rounded team right now. There's been this narrative for years now, you know, when will Cholo Simeone go for a more offensive, more expansive
style? It's now, it's this
style.
Season, Alex. It's right now.
We've heard this before, but maybe you're right. Maybe this time it's happening. You look at the squad, they've got the players capable of making that happen. You look at the midfield, Koke has probably had one of the best weeks of his career after his performance for Spain against Germany and this performance in the Atletico Madrid midfield against Barcelona. They've got options as well. You mentioned there was no Luis Suarez. They were without, well, Diego Costa was only fit enough to come off the bench. And yet you've got João Félix and Ángel Correa, who would look like a really good partnership up front as well. In defence, the numbers are better than ever. Only two goals conceded in La Liga so far this season. Two goals. It's absolutely amazing. So I think there are lots of reasons to be positive about Atletico. Of course, it's early. Of course, there's a long way to go. But looking at them, looking at, you know, Barca in disarray and looking at Real Madrid, they're absolutely contenders for this title, no question.
It was too easy for them, though. I mean, I think, you know what? I think they had to play better against Osasuna or even Betis than they had to play on Saturday.
I knew we were going to transition into hammering the Dutch coach because, you know, De Boer's not here. It's Koeman's turn.
But I just agree with both of you. They're just so good the way they play. And that touch from Carrasco to nutmeg Ter Stegen was just
I got to say this. I mean, I thought this was telling. So after the Clásico, you know, but contractually they have to send a player out to go and face the media. They sent out Serginho Dest, who just arrived and couldn't even speak Spanish, understandably. This time, they don't send anybody out. Eventually, they force poor Pedri, who is 17 years old, to go out there. Now, admittedly, Messi doesn't want to do it. Messi doesn't have to do it. Gerard Piqué was injured. Sergi Roberto was injured. But this was bad, Alex. How does it happen? I mean, I don't like reading too much into things, but I think this is something to read into. That nobody, not your boy Longley, Jules, not anybody else,
alone.
Not Griezmann, well, whatever.
Jordi Alba.
nobody's willing to come out and put their face forward. Nobody's willing to go and man up.
No, you're right. Even without Messi and Piqué and Sergio Roberto, there should be a senior player somewhere in that match day squad who steps up and faces the media. So it's not a 17-year-old kid. Now, Pedri is incredibly mature, looks pretty mature on and off the pitch, to be honest, but he shouldn't be put into a situation like that. I think it's desperately unfair to him. And the fact that it comes off the back of the Dest incident, which was just bizarre for everyone concerned, you know, to the surprise of the Spanish-speaking pitch-side reporter as much as Dest himself. The things aren't right at Barca. We know a lot of the reasons why, both on and off the pitch. But there's just a desperate lack of leadership there. And when you've got Leo Messi, who is the de facto leader, doesn't want to be there, I guess it's no surprise. The Piqué injury is a big one. And there are wildly kind of differing estimates as to how long he might be out for. Is it going to be 3 months? Is it going to be 6 months? Is it going to be 8 months? Depending on the route they take in terms of whether surgery is needed on the cruciate ligament or not. But either way, Piqué's absence is such a blow for Barca.
Because Sergio Roberto, obviously, Dest comes in. Now, Barcelona's account, I don't know if somebody retweeted this. They tweeted a picture of Samuel Umtiti, and it said Big Sam at the top. Different Big Sam, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's not going to be him. Roland Araujo is out. Alex, he's coming back. I mean, I still get the feeling it's going to be De Jong, or as you like to call him in Spain, De Jong, right?
Yeah, I think it will be. Koeman seems to quite like Frankie De Jong as centre-back. And look, it's not a position that's new to him. He's played there before.
Yeah, he's played there before for Barcelona. He hasn't played there before for a serious, well-coached team. He's played there before.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Who would have put him there before anyway? You know.
Yeah, and it raises questions, of course, in terms of the midfield as well. If you drop him back, then you've got to play Busquets, and Busquets isn't the player that he once was. He can still do it, but maybe not week in, week out. So there's a question about who partners Pjanic as well. So yes, that probably is the solution. You're right. It probably isn't the ideal solution.
It's such a mess, isn't it?
It really is a mess.
I mean, every level, there's just nothing. There's just nothing there.
I thought you'd be unhappy because this gives Koeman more alibis now to make excuses.
I mean, he came after the game saying, what more can I do? Are you for real? What more can you do? Just like, come on, make the right calls to start with. Make this team play better. Improve the relationship between Messi and not just Griezmann, Messi and everybody else. Because right now there's just nothing. And you saw Messi's face.
Or maybe change the system as well.
Yeah, or
change the system. Issue, I think. He likes this 4-2-3-1 and he's been pretty rigid in sticking to that. But the problem with this 4-2-3-1 is you end up with the four attacking players kind of at one end of the pitch and not necessarily helping out in terms of the defensive duties, and then the midfield is overrun and the defence comes under pressure as well. Now, I think Koeman's a guy who seems pretty set in his ways, and if that's the system he wants to play, maybe he's going to stick with it and hope that it comes good. But right now, I think there are big issues there.
We told everyone, even after the 4-0 win against Villarreal, the 3-0 win against whoever it was next, we said, let's wait against good teams. What did we see against Sevilla? They should have lost that game. They drew 1-1, God knows how. Against Real Madrid, they got beaten and well beaten. Against Atleti, they got beaten and well beaten. Okay, there's the Langley header. There's a couple of stuff in the second half. They were well beaten. In those games, it's just not good enough.
I wanna go back to Atleti, and then we'll put the boot in further on Koeman. But, you know, when Suarez wasn't there, and I want to kind of give Koeman the benefit of the doubt. I said, we've all kind of accepted that they've been adding Suarez. Suarez needs players around him. He's not a counter-attacker. And so we all said that this natural Cholismo 2.0 with more attacking verve, more playing of the ball was going to happen. Now, Alex, I did feel, and this is why I tip my hat to El Cholo Simeone, the man who over a steak in Buenos Aires once told me about the evils of golf on footballers and how football and golf should never mix. He really hates golf.
But why? What? For their back, for their fitness, for their what? For injuries?
He thinks it's a waste of time and not anything on any serious person under the age
of 40. Just a waste of time. No, you can't hurt them or anything.
You know, he told me, you know, he said, you should need to be, I like to tell young players to think about football all the time. So I tell them, when you're home, when you're flipping channels on your television, you know, absentmindedly, if you see green, stop and look. Is it a football match? If it's a football match, watch it. If it's golf, then keep moving. And I said, you really dislike golf? He says, yes. I think it's horrendous that, you know, a young man should be playing golf. You know, golf is for old people.
That's a bit.
So this is why Gareth Bale will never play for Cholo Simeone. That's
Gareth Bale to Atleti, I think, highly unlikely. But I want to mention, because I said, okay, this is a game where I'll give you a pass. You're playing Barcelona. If you want to go and play on the counter with Correa and Joao Felix, this is the perfect game to do it. But instead, he tricked Koeman. Instead, in that first half, they kept the ball. And even later when they were defending, I thought, you know, they were defending by keeping the ball, by moving it around, by not just by hitting it in space and testing the Barcelona back line. I mean, he outthought and outcoached Koeman. There's no question there. And I was struck, Alex, by what you said before about how they're more multidimensional this year. They can beat you in different ways. And I think they have an added weapon in Carrasco, where we kind of assumed that when he went to China, like, all right, see ya, dude's never coming back. Or he's never going to be the same. And now he comes back, and I thought he was a real difference maker in that game.
Yeah, I think Carrasco is interesting. And I think there's still more to come from him as well. Like you say, he went to China, but the difference with him and other many players who go to China, he went there and he was still really young, still in his early to mid-20s. He's come back now. And like I say, I think he can really add something to this team. Now, the interesting thing about his role against Barca was he was playing a more defensive position than he's been accustomed to. He was sort of operating as a wing-back, I guess.
He kind of did that for Belgium, though, too, didn't he?
Sometimes, yeah.
He mentioned that. He said that it's not the first time that he's done it. He's done it with the national team. I don't think he loves it. I think he'd rather be playing in a more attacking position. But it looks like he's on board with this project and he's willing to do it for Simeone. He did a pretty good job. And he's really, really dangerous because, as we saw with the goal, he's got that. He's got the pace. He's got the skill. He's got a pretty good engine. And he's one, like I say, I don't necessarily expect him to start every game, and I don't think he's Atletico Madrid's most important player, but the fact they've got players like him, others, someone like Kondogbia, who might not start every game but can come in and do a really important job, someone like Correa, who Simeone loves, but again, might not start every game but can come in and play a part. They've got lots of options pretty much throughout the team. Maybe the one place they don't have options is right back, where Trippier has to play pretty much all the time and there's no alternative there. But otherwise, like I say, I think it's about them having the squad, which, if they're going to mount a title challenge, maybe they haven't quite had that in the past, and I think they probably do now.
Do you know who can play right back in an emergency situation and do it better than anybody else?
Who?
Saul. Right?
No way. I thought we were going to say Herrera.
No,
who's missing.
Herrera,
he's been one of the best players.
Well, yeah, that's the old trick of taking the defensive midfielder and putting him at right back. But yeah, I just think Saul could actually give you something.
He's left-footed.
It doesn't. Well, imagine him coming inside. Honestly, I don't think there's anything Saul cannot do when it's good.
Yeah, I think Saul can play anywhere. You're absolutely right. In fact, I think Saul has suffered in his career to date by being so versatile, because he can play anywhere. That's why Simeone drops him in at left back or plays him out wide when he's never really quite had the consistent run of games in central midfield that maybe he needs to take it to the next level, and he still hasn't quite, I think, fulfilled the potential that we all think he has. Yeah, I think he's suffered for that versatility in the past.
All right, Jules, I think that's more than enough love for Atletico Madrid. Let's go back to Barca. And I just want to... Okay, we spoke before about De Jong, or De Jong, as you guys insist on calling him. They even say Janujaj. I heard on the comment on La Liga TV, Janujaj. But anyway, that's a different story. And by the way, they're top of the league, so well done to them. What is the deal? I mean, other than De Jong, who can you put back there? Can you just help us sift through it? What is the situation with Umtiti? What's up with Araujo? Is there some kid in the B team that we don't know about? What can you do?
I mean, the options are the ones that you've just laid out. I mean, what the situation with Umtiti, that's a question that everyone's been asking for a while, because we all remember how good he looked when he joined Barca, and how he looked like being the natural partner for Piqué and potentially, you know, the player to be at the back.
But is he fit?
He's not fit.
Well, these knee problems, I mean, who knows if he's ever going to be the player that he, I hate to say it, but the player that he looked back then, because he barely plays. And when he does, he doesn't look right. Araujo, actually, when he has played, has impressed me. But again, it's a question of when he's when he's going to be available, but he's a kid. I think it has to be De Jong. I think it has to be, and I think that there's even more responsibility on Longley as well to be the leader at the back. Which, although I think he's a good defender, he's a little bit quiet, and he's not necessarily the kind of character that wants to play that.
What happens if Longley gets hurt too or suspended?
Yeah, well, I know he's left-footed already. So if you bring him Titi, you'll have a pair of left-footed centre-backs, which is not, you know, two right-footed centre-backs can play together. So yeah, I can't
two left-footed ones defend you.
No, they can play together. I was going to say, Titi gave a big interview, I think a week ago, 10 days ago on French television, where he was saying he was working hard to get fit again. The knee was obviously a big problem. He delayed that surgery, if you remember, and played with a bad knee, which I think made it even worse, and maybe, like Alex was saying, made it so bad that it would never go back to what it was before. It would always have pain, I think. But I just think you wait until January and then you bring Eric Garcia. Yeah,
but you have to play a bunch of games between now and then.
I know, but in January,
you're in the relegation zone, and won't that be fun?
No, you play De Jong until January and then bring Eric Garcia on January the 1st, and then that's it.
There's no Canterano we need to look out for, yeah?
Well, the other thing, you talk about January, I was just going to say, the problem is right now, of course, Barcelona don't have a president. They've got this temporary committee in charge. They've got these elections in January to have a new president. Can you really make those kind of sporting decisions and plan for the future and buy and sell players if the new president, the new board, the new sporting director, if none of those people are even in place? What, the election's what, January 24th or something? Yeah. So, you know, that's a pretty major obstacle in terms of this planning as well.
It's such a mess. It's incredible.
But just to confirm, there's nobody from the Cantera who's ready to step up.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I don't watch a lot of...
No, I know, I've read Sport and Mundo Deportivo. They go and they vote 50 pages a day to the stuff.
The Catalan press.
Yeah, and they're not saying, oh, look.
I know of.
Okay.
You know the real shame.
They will have no choice but to try, but there's no one that I know.
There's no, like, Jordi Lescorts coming through or whatever the hell.
If only Barca could play Italian teams every weekend, because clearly their best game was against Juventus away.
I know, exactly.
Clearly that's too easy for him, Italian team.
Barcelona would win Serie A hands down. Okay, so let's try to imagine what this would look like. So if De Jong joins Clement Longley at the back, obviously you're down to Pjanic and Busquets in the middle of the park. There's nobody I'm forgetting here,
or
is there?
Sergio Roberto, if you want to.
Well, he's injured too, remember? That's why Dest is playing right back. And also, you need him. I mean, is there any way back into the picture for Coutinho in any kind of meaningful way? Or is he just destined to be some sort of body off
he
the bench?
He started well the season. So he just came off the team because he was injured. Now he's back from injury. He came on Saturday. I think he could start in the Champions League.
When he was talking about the system before, you can't play Coutinho in the two.
The midfield two, no. I couldn't see, and he's. I could see Coutinho in a more offensive role. I guess you're looking at Ricky Pucci, you're looking at Carles Alenia, neither of whom Koeman really seems to fancy, and he's not the first Barcelona coach not to really fancy them either. I know Barca fans have been screaming to give Ricky Pucci more of a role for ages, but coach after coach has decided not to do that.
Yeah, but when he played last season with Setien, after the restart especially, he was really good. He was the only good player they had, to be fair.
He's talented, but he's slight. He doesn't look like... I mean, he hasn't got the physique, I think, necessarily at this stage of his development. And there's a little bit of talk that maybe his attitude, there's a little bit of arrogance there, and he's rubbed up one or two of the senior players up the wrong way as well. I don't know how much to read into that.
He strikes me as more of an attacking midfielder anyway. I mean, Alenia maybe, but then Alenia physically, I don't know that you can put him. You can't put Alenia in a two, can you?
No, I don't think so.
You're back to square one. No. It's those two guys, and one of them isn't particularly mobile, and the other one is Pjanic.
And Busquets is injured anyway as well, so you know. This is just so bad. It's all so bad.
Last point on this, Alex. I said I didn't want to give him much more of an alibi, but these are legitimate mitigating circumstances for Ronald Koeman. As the season unwinds, given the fact that, you know, obviously you have this election in January, whoever wins, they're going to be in a situation, you know what, maybe I'm better off writing off the season so that next year will be better come what may. You know, next year, either with Messi or without Messi, you know, I'm starting from a certain point in time. I mean, is there a danger that this season could be written off? Or can they not actually afford that because of their financial situation? And so they have to be in the Champions League next year.
Yeah, I guess define written off. And if writing off means you don't make the top four, then no, they can't afford that. Of course, the financial situation's dreadful already, and they're in the Champions League every season, even if they get, you know, humiliated in the knockout rounds. So that would be a disaster. The other interesting thing is, like you say, a new president comes in. What does he do with Koeman? We've heard some kind of shifting.
There's even a debate about this.
Candidates on that. We saw, well, look, Victor Font, for example, one of the leading candidates, he initially said, well, no, Koeman won't be coach under me. I want Xavi. He since walked back on that a little bit and said, well, maybe Xavi could come in as a general manager, and I'm not opposed to maybe keeping Koeman as coach.
Why would you keep Koeman? Who would want to keep Koeman? Koeman. I don't understand, apart from Koeman himself. Hey, I can stay. Yeah, no, thank you. You could go back to Holland.
Well, because, I mean, he's a club legend, and he's got that status, even if, I mean, patience will
Alex,
start
this
to
is
run
the,
out.
But Alex, this is their first start. This is their first start of a season since 1991. This is something we've never seen in the last 30 years.
All right, I will leave you with a positive thought here. Jules just mentioned that this is their worst start in the season since 1991.
Don't give me that they won the Champions League in 92, okay? That's
Alex, who won the league in who won the league that year that they had their worst start?
I know it's Barcelona.
It was Barcelona. It was the dream team.
I know.
Yeah?
Yeah, 30 years ago, okay?
All right.
It was not the football that we see now, and it was not certainly as bad as what we've seen so far.
Hidden hope. Alex, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough being mean to Koeman. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
No Van Dijk, no Joe Gomez, no Alexander-Arnold, no Thiago Alcantara, no Henderson, no Salah. That's six starters out, plus Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. But guess what, Jules? The crest on the front of the shirt seems to count more than the name on the back of the shirt. As far as Jurgen Klopp is concerned, Liverpool destroy Leicester 3-0, turning arguably their best performance of the season thus far. Discuss.
I see the crest on the front. I hear the sound of victory. They were good. I mean, Leicester were bad, to be fair. But because
Leicester were top of the league going into it.
Yeah, but because Liverpool was so good. If you compare to the City game where Leicester were fantastic, going on the break, that was clearly the idea again. And it just didn't work that way because I thought Liverpool were relentless. They were good. They created something. They could have won easily 5 or 6.
Yeah. Hit the woodwork a bunch of times.
Yeah, and maybe they were inspired by what Klopp said before the game with all the players missing, all the players like Curtis Jones, in a way who had to prove something. And that was fantastic.
Great player, Curtis Jones.
Yeah, really good. Milan stayed top of Serie A by winning away to Napoli 2-1. Gab, no surprise who decided this game. I'll give you a little clue. His first name starts with a Z.
Of course it's Zlatan. It has to be Zlatan, that first header where he goes up against Koulibaly. Tremendous, tremendous goal.
Because let's not forget, it's against Koulibaly that he played, not against, like, you know...
Yeah, not against him. Koulibaly, though, did have a pretty poor game. Look, it's huge for Milan. Napoli, I thought, actually played relatively well. They hit the woodwork. They could have got back into it. They were really hampered when Bakayoko picked up a second yellow, and that was kind of the end. Actually finished 3-1. I think I might have said 2-1 before. Yeah. But Zlatan, though, picks up a muscular injury. This could be an issue now. A lot of people are freaking out over this. Looks like he's going to be out probably maybe up to 2 weeks. You know what? The one thing which is different about Zlatan now compared to when he came back after the lockdown is that Zlatan was Zlatan Ultra. He was like, me, Zlatan, let me do everything. He was still really good. This Zlatan is a center forward. He plays as a center forward. And I think the difference is he's developed the trust in his teammates. He's like, I don't need to go back and get the ball off of Bennacer in the middle of the park to go and do something. I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to wait for the service. I'm going to make myself useful. And I think this makes him even better, and it can prolong his career.
And his injury is when he crosses the ball from that left-hand side where you don't expect him to do that kind of stuff. And it was a great cross, by the way, that no one in the box got onto, and then that's how he got injured. It's such a shame.
But he'll be back.
Yeah, of course.
No Casemiro, no Benzema, no spine for Real Madrid, no Sergio Ramos, of course, either, and they draw 1-1 with Unai Emery's Villarreal. Villarreal were above them in the table, so it's 2 points gained, yes? 2 points lost, rather. or I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, whatever.
But not good.
It was not good. They were not good. They scored very early with Mariano after 2 minutes and then conceded another penalty. I mean, how many penalties this season? Even when Ramos is not there, they still concede penalties.
They blame Varane some for the penalty there. I mean, I looked at Courtois, but, you know.
It's just, I don't think they were good again. I'm a bit worried.
Eden Hazard, MIA, missing in action?
Missing completely. I mean, maybe that was not the game and Villarreal were in good form, to be fair to them. But this is, I don't think he's good enough. It's
Mariano Diaz started up front for Real Madrid, played more minutes in this game than he has in the last 10 months combined.
True. And I tell you what, against Inter in the Champions League this week, You can't play like this. Are they going to get slaughtered?
Oh, yeah. It's in or out.
Bayern ahead 1-1 by Josh Sargent and Werder Bremen. Gab, was it smart to leave Gnabry, Goretzka, Sané if you were Hansi Flick? It's a bit strange, right?
I suppose he looked at it and says, my God, these guys are so traumatized by the beatdown inflicted by Spain. Let me leave them out. It's only Werder Bremen. But I tell you what, Werder Bremen took the game to them. They played really, really well.
They were the Sargent, better side.
I thought was really good.
Yeah.
Manuel Neuer saved Bayern's hides in this one. I think you need a little bit of a rethink here. I'll tell you what, super, super tight at the top. I think it's four teams in the space of just 2 points at the top of the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Mikel Arteta slammed Nicolas Pepe for getting himself foolishly sent off as Arsenal drew 0-0 with Leeds. Jules, that was silly, but regardless, it was still a bit of a horror show from Arsenal. Lacazette on the bench. There was the reports of the training ground bust-up between Davi Luiz and Dani Ceballos. Not a great few days for Uncle Mikel.
Yeah, it's a bit tough, and he will have to find the answers. He moved to a back four, which maybe was a bit surprising for this game. Didn't really work out. As you said, Leeds hit the woodwork three times. They should have won that game. So I guess the only positive is the point that you gain, but you need to wake up quickly and find answers, find solutions to what the problem is. You don't create enough, you don't score enough, and you don't even defend enough on the game that we saw on Sunday. You know, even if they kept a clean sheet, which was completely, crazy considering how the game went.
Maybe signing all those old guys upon reflection, not such a great idea.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says United 1-0 win against West Brom is not a step forward in terms of performance. Gab, is he right? And why can't Donny van de Beek get onto the pitch?
Yeah, Solskjaer is correct. Yeah, bravo, Ole. You're right.
Well done.
Not a step forward. He says, but sometimes 3 points is more important. Yeah, you know, enough of this nonsense. This was a bad performance. Paul Pogba wasn't on the bench because he's injured, of course. So I thought, hey, look, here we can see Donny van de Beek. You know, van de Beek, by the way, is the only Manchester United to have scored a goal from open play this season at home. Think about that. Yeah. And that was in garbage time against Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, absolutely atrocious. So you play Juan Mata instead. I love Juan Mata. Juan Mata, though, is not part of your future. He turns 33 years old before the end of the season. He's on an expiring contract.
Unbelievable.
If Van de Beek can't get into a game from the start like this one.
Against West Brom.
When is this dude going to play?
But don't worry, he's going to play in the Europa League.
Oh, there you go.
In the Champions League.
Alexander Isak's header gave Real Sociedad a 1-0 win over Cadiz, making it 7 wins on the bounce in La Liga. Jules, will they stay there?
It's a good question. I hope so, because they were good. They were really good. They could have won by more, even without the players missing that they didn't have. And again, David Silva, it's just a joy to watch.
And Oyarzabal gets better and better.
Yeah, they all are. It's quite incredible how good they are individually and collectively too. Can't believe we've left this long to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, Gab. So tell me about what he did for Juve this weekend.
Well, first of all, he's not going to be happy that you've waited this long.
It's true.
He scored 2 goals, but you know what? And people go, oh, look, Cristiano saves Juve again. No, Juve actually played really, really well for one. And if you're a Juve fan, get excited. Matthijs de Ligt is back.
Yep.
He played with Demiral at the back. It shows you that your future post Bonucci Chiellini is pretty much the
strongest pair already anyway, even if Bonucci and Chiellini are there.
Some people might well make that argument.
Yeah.
Youssoufa Moukoko makes his debut for Dortmund in the 5-2 win over Hertha. I mean, Jules, we hyped this guy up to no end. He came out at the end, but he was overshadowed by the other wunderkind, wasn't he?
Oh, man. Erling Haaland with a quadruple. I don't know. What's the name in German? Viv something?
I don't know.
Pretty impressive, especially, you know, when they came. I mean, the hat-trick was in 12 minutes or 30 minutes, something crazy like this. If you see the goals, his power, the pace, the finishing, everything is perfect. Maybe the keeper could have done better on one, but incredible. And then he comes off and Moukoko comes on, becoming the youngest ever player to play in the Bundesliga. It's a fantastic day for Dortmund.
16 years in one day.
Exactly. Chelsea beat Newcastle 2-0 in a third, 2 points off the top. Gab, are they better without Havertz and Pulisic?
They're more of a team without Havertz and Pulisic. No question about it. Newcastle were terrible, but yeah. You have Tammy Abraham, you have a reference point. It's easier for people like Ziyech, like Werner, to play off of him.
Course.
It's as simple as that. And also, they go look back with an actual passer in the middle of the park alongside Conte, like Kovacic.
And Captain N'Golo. Don't forget, Captain N'Golo. He was good, man. Yeah. With the armband, he's good.
Now, this was all the way back on Friday, but Jules, I can't ignore the fact that Paris Saint-Germain found a way to waste a 2-0 lead and lose to Monaco and my man Cesc Fabregas.
Can we ignore? No, we can't ignore. They just played for the first half. That was it. You can't play just for 45 minutes. Cesc came on, changed the game. He was so intelligent, played between the lines, found space. And in the end, Monaco deserved. But PSG just shot themselves in the foot once again. It's crazy.
Kevin Folland.
Inter go 2-goal down at home against Torino and roll back to win 4-2. Gab, let me guess. You're going to talk about Conte and how unhappy he was and the lack of intensity. And what about Lukaku and his double-double?
Well, I'm not going to talk about it. That's what he talks about. That's what he talks about after every game. He's pretty monothematic that way. Lukaku, let's celebrate him first. 2 goals, 2 assists.
Incredible.
Very impressive. But then guess what? He's a really good player. And I'll get back to him. But first, I want to deal with Mr. Conte. It's not just lack of intensity. It's not just lack of ferocity. For an hour, you played badly. You made fundamental mistakes at the back. I'm not going to go back to the Eriksen thing, although that's a whole other issue with Pepe Marotta coming out and saying, well, you know, if Eriksen wants to leave, we're not going to keep him here. You know what? You've already destroyed the guy, so you're gonna loan him somewhere and take a loss on it. You know, that's more great.
But we all knew that.
But let's not forget, Eriksen was signed for Conte.
Yeah.
And Conte knew who Eriksen was.
He wanted him.
So that's going to go down as an L in Conte's list. As far as the game, it was almost like they were sleepwalking through the first hour. This is a Torino side that are fighting to avoid relegation. In fact, they're in the relegation zone. They were without Belotti, their top scorer. They lost Verdi at halftime. In the end, you can say, oh, look, when we started being intense, we won. No. When you looked at it and you said, we're 2-0 down, we're being embarrassed by a terrible team coached by freaking Marco Giampaolo here. And you have better players, then of course, you've got far better players, and of course you go for it and you start scoring and you win 4-2. I'm not expecting you to play that way for 90 minutes. I'm expecting you to have order. You can't just focus on intensity. You should focus on the way you play, the way you set up your back line, because there's serious issues there, and they better set them up. They'd better go and resolve these before the Real Madrid game in midweek.
And there will be games where they don't come back from 2-0 down. There've been games already where they haven't come back. There've games where they've come back, like this weekend. But this is a dangerous game to play.
Yeah, they need to become a 90-minute team. And I'll tell you what, Lukaku, in his wisdom, said the most intelligent thing of this day, which is simply, we're not a great team yet. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, I know you like to celebrate your techers.
Oh, yeah.
How about my man, Jeremy Boga, another one of the Chelsea diaspora, who, of course, now is at Sassuolo. They beat Verona 2-0 away. They're second in Serie A.
Incredible story. And we talked about De Zerbi already, the manager before, and how great his philosophy is, how great this team is playing. Which
out
is
of
great.
Contract but, in the summer. Yeah. Big things on their way.
But when on top of that, you've got individual talents like Boga and that curler right in the top corner that he scored is fantastic. And they've got Maxime Lopez that they went to get in Marseille, who is not even playing under AVB in Marseille, who's playing so well with Locatelli in midfield. It's just good. And guess who they're playing next weekend? Inter. That's going to be good. That's going to be good on Saturday.
That's big for Conte.
Yeah. Leipzig are held by Eintracht Frankfurt 1-1 and missed the chance to go top in Germany. Gab, not a good day for my man Dayot Upamecano, who I know you love dearly, but man, mistakes.
Yeah, he completely missed the header, which led to the Eintracht goal. Leipzig again, they create enough chances to win, but they're not fluid. Sorloth started. Was terrible. Poulsen came on and scored a great goal to equalize.
Again, I mean, he only scores great goals. It's incredible.
He didn't score very many, tell you what. Leipzig, they could be top right now. They should be top
right
now.
Yeah, they should be.
It's going to look like a mess. But interesting on Upamecano, because Jan Åge Fjørtoft reporting again that he's definitely going next summer. Mm. And he's still so young. Yeah. I wonder if this is getting into his head a little bit, all the speculation about his future. I wonder if it's an indication that he might move earlier, maybe even in January.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's interesting. He could have gone, obviously, last summer and the summer before and the January before that, stayed. And you are maybe that plays a bit on his mind. Huge game for them on Tuesday against PSG in Paris. Incredible.
Exactly. And look, I mean, if you're PSG, this is the kind of Upamecano you want to face.
Who made a mistake in that first game, although they won that 1-2-1.
Pedro Galese is a goalkeeper for Peru and for Orlando City, and he figured out how to get himself sent off during a penalty shootout. And that was just the beginning, Jules. Crazy stuff.
Incredible in the MLS playoff, where he was sent off, as you say, for coming off his line, sent off by the referee in the 129th minute. So very much in the shootout, and then replaced by Rodrigo Schlegel, who is a defender, who saved the penalty and qualify Orlando. I mean, I've never seen anything like this before.
You can't make substitutions during penalty shootouts. What's even funnier is the rules change. You don't get sent off for coming off your line anymore. I mean, it was a second yellow.
But even before, when he was allowed, it never happened. Do you know what I mean?
But this is the weird thing. They introduced the rule. Then they said, oh, this is stupid. We keep booking players for goalkeepers for doing it. So then they rescinded the rule. But because the MLS had already started and because, you know, they don't play on – they play in a calendar year league, they said, oh, well, the league has started. We can't change the rule back. But it's stupid.
Oh, it's crazy.
The league has started. Yeah, I know. But it's something that affects everybody equally. But anyway, mad stuff.
Yeah. Montpellier beat Strasbourg 4-3. It was 3-3 at halftime, by the way. Incredible game. But Gab, that's not what you want to talk about. You want to talk about one of the substitutes.
Yes, and I'm gonna do this every year that we do the show, every year that he's still playing. I'm going to send a big Valentine to my man, Vitorino Hilton. The man is 43 years old. He came on as a sub in this game, but he's been starting all season long. He just came back from injury. I say this again. 43 years old. He's not a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
He is a center back. Absolutely incredible. Freak of nature. Ibra's got very little on him.
Yeah.
All right, Jules, that brings us to an end. What do you say we go back and do this again on Thursday?
Thursday,
with some Champions League. How about that? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.